Our Father in heaven, how thankful we are to call you Father. That we can say, our Father is so special and so meaningful to us. Because we are family. You are our Father. That makes us brothers and sisters and family. And we're thankful that we are family. We're thankful for your accepting us. Truth is, God, your acceptance is the only acceptance some of us have ever experienced. We've experienced a lot of neglect and a lot of rejection. But to experience your acceptance is something very special. Your acceptance is what matters more than any other acceptance we can experience. And your acceptance helps us deal with any rejection we experience in this life. And so we thank you. We thank you, O God, for accepting us. And it is our prayer today, God, that your acceptance transforms our hearts so that we can accept one another. May we accept others because you have accepted us. And may we accept all those whom you accept. As we accept one another, may your holy name be praised. In Jesus' name, amen. Artists often have a favorite medium with which to express themselves. Some like pencil and paper, others like watercolor, some oil painting, others like clay that they can mold and that they can shape. God's chosen medium is people. God paints a picture of God's love and God's glory in and through people. People who God accepts and people who accept one another. Sometimes people find it difficult to accept one another because of these historical partitions that are bigger than their lives or even their generation. I remember that April 4th when a shot rang out in Memphis. I remember the riots, and I remember the burned out buildings, and I remember the community that suffered when Dr. Martin Luther King was shot. And I remember the polarization of the community that took place. I remember the curfews because I lived there. And I remember people talking and people trying to process. I had relationships with African Americans, even back in the 60s. And I heard them processing it. And I, as a white boy, heard my family and people in our neighborhood processing it. How terrible it is when people cannot accept one another. I have sat in tree houses, if you will, and grass huts, listening to Spanish Panamanians and African descent black Panamanians and Indian Panamanians from the Kuna tribes and the Embera tribes all talk about how difficult it was for them to accept each other. Truth is, the Kuna didn't like the Embera. And the Embera didn't like the Spanish Panamanians. And the Spanish Panamanians didn't like the African Panamanians. And the truth is, even though these people were all Christians, it was difficult for them to accept each other because of a racial divide that was far bigger than just their generation. It was a racial divide of historical proportions. Do you find it difficult to accept someone for these big historical reasons? Is it difficult for you to accept someone because of the color of their skin or their ancestry? In the New Testament, we see an ethnic wall between the Jews and the Gentiles. That historical partition between human beings provides much of the background and the context for the letter that we call Romans. Paul tries to break down this ancient division by pointing out that the Jews and the Gentiles stand on common ground. In Romans chapter 1, Paul goes into great details to describe how Gentiles are sinners. And he talks about the sins that Gentiles deal with. And he talks about how bad it is among the Gentiles. These people are sinners. And in Romans chapter 2, Paul then changes the focus and talks about how Jews are sinners. And he goes into some great detail about their sin and about the consequences of their sin and how they are isolated from God. And in Romans chapter 2, the end into chapter 3, Paul points out that all people, whether they are Jewish or whether they are Gentile, all people are sinners. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. All are separated from God by their sins. And Paul goes into such great detail to talk to the Gentiles and to talk to the Jews and to talk to all of them, because what Paul wants them to understand is they may want to point fingers at each other and act superior to one another, but the truth of the matter is they're all equally sinners. So there's some common ground whether they want to admit it or not. And I wonder if Paul had been writing a letter to the church in Memphis in 1968, if he'd have wanted to start out with the African-American community and say, here are some things that I see that are sins among the African-American community, and here are some sins that I see among the white community, and the truth is, you're all sinners. You're all equally sinners. And you white folks don't need to be looking down on black people. And you black people don't need to be looking down on white people. You need to understand, you're all sinners. And beginning in Romans chapter 4, Paul points out that all people, Jews and Gentiles, are saved not by what they have done, not by their pedigree, not by their good works, but they're all saved by their faith in Jesus Christ. Again, this is a great equalizer. The Jews can't say, well, we're better than the Gentiles, and that's why we're saved. And the Gentiles can't think, well, we're better than the Jews, and that's why we're saved. They're all saved because of Jesus, not because of what they've done. Jews and Gentiles, then, Paul is saying in Romans, are equally sinners. There's the common ground that they need. And Jews and Gentiles, Paul is saying, are equally saved by grace, not themselves. In fact, in spite of themselves. That's their common ground. And in today's text, in Romans 15, Paul writes about Jesus and Jews and Gentiles. And Paul's purpose is to bring people together, to bring this church community in Rome that is fractured, people lining up and saying, well, we're Jewish Christians, and other people lining up and saying, we're Gentile Christians, and they have this wall between them. And Paul wants to tear down that wall and bring them together, the Gentile Christians and the Jewish Christians, so that they accept one another. And in Romans chapter 15, verses 14 through 22, Paul talks of his own calling as a minister to the Gentiles. And he says that his purpose is to present the Gentiles to God as an acceptable offering. What Paul is saying is God will accept Gentiles. And if God will accept Gentiles, then Jewish Christians ought to accept Gentiles too. This would be like Paul coming into the racially divided Memphis in 1968 in the aftermath of the assassination and saying that blacks can be an acceptable offering to God. And guess what, white people? If God will accept black people, you ought to as well. Do those kind of historical partitions that are bigger than you and your family and your city and your generation, are those hard for you to overcome? Truth is, those historical partitions are not the only thing keeping Christians from accepting each other. Sometimes Christians refuse to accept one another because of what I would call hysterical pettiness. In Romans 14, Paul talks about disputable matters that divide Christians, and people can get hysterical over matters of opinion, gray areas, disputable matters. Paul uses that language to describe this kind of stuff in Romans 14, gray areas, disputable matters. There are three examples that Paul particularly develops in this chapter. One is food, one is holy days, one is wine. Some Christians eat all food. And they refuse to accept people who have conscience-based dietary regulations. And that shouldn't be, Paul says. The Christians who have decided not to eat meat have a hard time accepting the meat eaters among them. And Christians who disagree over the celebration of holy days have a difficult time accepting each other because some of them are convinced every day's alike. There is no such thing as a holy day. And others are like, well, yes, I honor some days as being holy. And these people were having a hard time accepting one another because they viewed these things differently. And there were Christians who would drink wine. And they were having difficulty accepting those who didn't drink wine. Why are they so unenlightened? And some of the wine drinkers, or some of the people who did not drink wine, were having trouble accepting some of those who did. How careless can you be? You can imagine them saying. Now let me ask you a question. Do you have difficulty accepting others who disagree with you and your conclusions over some of these gray areas, some of these disputable matters? Let me ask you another question. Have you ever seen an entire church get hysterical about these or other disputable matters? Boy, I have. I have seen churches get hysterical. But let me be real with you and say I have been hysterical over disputable matters. I have caused fusses over things where there's not a clear-cut right or wrong. I have caused fusses over things when people disagreed with me. I have accused improper motives among people who felt differently than I did about things. And I don't think I'm the only one who's done that. And I don't think I'm the only one who's seen that. In Romans 14, Paul shares with the church how they need to handle these differences, these petty things that sometimes divide people. First, he says, don't judge. Don't judge another person who feels differently about a disputable matter than you do. And in the chapter, Paul uses a number of ways to kind of back up his suggestion that they shouldn't judge each other. One time he says, who are you to judge somebody else's servant? People answer to God, not you. And basically what Paul is saying is, if you are judging somebody because they do something different than what you do on one of these disputable matters, aren't you putting yourself in the place of God? Paul goes on in this chapter and talks about how important it is not to destroy someone's life and someone's faith by what you do. In fact, he goes so far, he says, don't put a stumbling block in somebody's way. Don't trip them up. But he goes further than that. He says, sometimes you need to be willing to keep your mouth shut. Be quiet about what you believe. Have you ever known a Christian who had no filter whatsoever? This person has no private opinions about anything. Because if there's an opinion, they're going to be public and they're going to be enforced on everybody. Ever known a Christian like that? Ever been a Christian like that? Am I the only one? The first time I discovered these words in Romans 14 that said, keep it between yourself and God, I'm like, oh, wow. Make every effort to enjoy peace. Peace doesn't just happen in a church where people have historical partitions and hysterical pettiness that can divide them. It takes work. It takes effort. It takes energy. And I love the words that Paul uses when he says, bear with each other. Sometimes we just have to put up with each other. We have to bear with each other. This last week I had a letter from an old friend of mine, who said, I really need to talk to you about struggles that I'm having with my home church. I've been at this church for more than 20 years, and I'm really having a difficult time with some of the things that I'm seeing and some of the things that I'm experiencing, and I'm really wanting to know how to handle some of these things. Can there be a better list of suggestions to that friend of mine than these in Romans? The issue was not over some core belief. The issue was over things that everybody would agree are disputable matters. Well, don't judge. Don't look down. Be convinced in your own mind what you believe. But that doesn't mean everybody else has to view it like you do. Be willing to keep quiet. And grit your teeth and bear with it. Finally, in our text for today, Romans chapter 15, verse 7, Paul writes that they should accept one another. I want you to look at the progression in this text. Don't judge over these gray areas. Don't judge. By judge, it means you think someone's going to go to hell because they believe differently from you over some gray area, some disputable matter, some matter of opinion. So don't do that. But then Paul raises the bar a little bit. Don't look down on someone. Now, you're not saying they're going to go to hell, but you're saying you are wiser and you are superior. Don't do that. And then Paul raises the bar again by saying it's not just what you don't do. Don't judge. Well, good, but there's more to it than that. Don't look down. Good, but there's more to it than that. Accept one another. This takes it to a really high level where you're not just putting up with each other, but you're realizing that you can embrace and accept and love and fellowship one another, even if you disagree over some of the finer points or disputable matters, if you will. And I love the way this is worded in Romans 15, 17. Accept one another just as Christ accepted you. In other words, the basis of my accepting you, even if I disagree with you over some disputable matter, what you eat or what holy day or what you drink, even if I disagree with you, I accept you because God's accepted me. God has accepted me, even though I'm not 100% pure in everything that I think is right or wrong. And I should accept you, even if you are not. And I love how this continues. Accept one another as Christ accepted you, in order that you can bring praise to God. Now, if you've ever seen somebody who had a difficult time accepting another because of their some historical partition, or if you've ever seen somebody who had a difficult time accepting someone because of some hysterical pettiness, then I want to suggest to you that you have seen someone who is failing to appreciate being accepted by God. And I guess what I'm saying to you is, if you're having trouble accepting black people or white people, or whatever category you want to put in, or if you're having a difficult time accepting someone as a brother who feels differently about food or drink or holy days, or I don't know, what are some of the disputable matters that we would throw in there? Maybe what you need to do is just stop and realize how God has accepted you as a child of God, even though you're a sinner and don't deserve to have a relationship with God. It is only when we stop to realize how incredible it is that God has embraced us that we're able then to look at each other and accept and embrace each other. I love the way this is worded too. It doesn't say accept one another just as Christ has accepted others. Because then we could say, well, I'm not sure Christ has accepted you, but I'm not sure I have to accept you. That's not the basis on which this argument is made by Paul. Accept each other as you have been accepted. If you're not accepting somebody else, what you're saying is, what you're calling into question is, have you been accepted by God? You're bringing judgment on yourself when you fail to accept Jewish Christians or Gentile Christians or white Christians or black Christians or Hispanic Christians or Imbara or Kuna Christians. Or Pakistani Christians. You're bringing judgment on yourself when you fail to accept, meat-eating Christians, holy day celebrating Christians, wine-drinking Christians, wine-abstaining Christians, every day's the same Christians, vegetarian Christians. You are bringing condemnation on yourself. You're denying the acceptance of God for your life. When I have been my most narrow-minded and demanding of others and exclusive as a Christian, those have been the times when I have failed to understand just how much grace God extended to me to accept me and make me a son of God. But I want to suggest to you that Romans 15:7 teaches that there's more than church unity going on here when people accept each other. God is praised when people accept each other. When I learn to deal with people who are different, when I not only don't judge them, not only don't look down on them, when I open up and accept people who are different, whether racially or ethnically or politically or in some gray area of our beliefs, some disputable matter, some matter of opinion, God is actually praised when that happens. Now, I have taught years ago, and I was taught years ago, that if you accept people with whom there's any difference whatsoever in your faith, you've sinned. And God is dishonored. But this text tells me that if I accept people like that, God is praised. I tell you, it's hard. It's hard to be quiet sometimes. It's hard to not put a stumbling block in somebody's way sometimes. It's hard, especially as a church, when you're trying to work through how you do all this stuff. But I'll tell you, God is praised. God is honored when we accept one another in spite of the differences that we might have. Now, if you're able, I'd like for you to stand up for a second. And I want you to repeat these words after me, okay? Repeat them after me. Christ accepts me. I accept you. Praise be to God. Let's do it again. We're warming up here. We're rehearsing. Christ accepts me. I accept you. Praise be to God. One more time to practice. Christ accepts me. I accept you. Praise be to God. Now, I want you to turn to somebody sitting by you, and I want you to look them in the eye. Turn around. Somebody behind you, beside you, whatever. Turn around. I want you to look them in the eye, and I want you to repeat after me. Christ accepts me. I accept you. Praise be to God. Now, let's do it again. Find somebody else to look at in the eyes, and I want you to say these words again. Christ accepts me. I accept you. Praise be to God. All right. Now let me have you back for just a second here. That was pretty good. A lot of people were smiling when they said, I did see one person go, I accept you, like that. We're going to be praying that that works out through the week here. So here's the deal. Really, here's the deal. Imagine a church where people not only stop judging each other and looking down on each other. Imagine a church where people accept each other. Imagine.
To honor you.